the general manager. What? By the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins. Ross, thanks so much for joining us. I know the winter meetings are a hectic time, and I know in your spare time you like to get off campus every now and then, so I appreciate you squeezing us in for a couple of minutes this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
I'll ask you, I guess, the first question that obviously everybody in Toronto has been talking about. Last night, as we were preparing to go into the Blue Jay suite for our daily briefing, who should walk by us but the lovely and talented Jay Alou, the agent for Jose Bautista. And, of course, some of us put two and two together and came up with four. Wilner put two and two together and came up with five.
I thought I got seven, personally.
That's the way it goes. I'll ask you just flat out, where do things stand with Jose Bautista? Are you actively engaged in negotiations with him?
So there are not many players that we're not actively engaged with that fit the needs that we have. Then this is a time where, you know, teams, agents tend to take advantage of the opportunities to get together, think about things a little bit more. You know, maybe it's not more creatively, but a little bit more exhaustively, because we can, because we're all in one building for a longer period of time. So it's a great thing. There is momentum, and what we're trying to do is not let the momentum turn the emotion.
And that's the big deal, right? Because when you're all here together, it seems like it's different than it was in years past, because you guys stay holed up in your suites a lot more, and a lot of this is done by text rather than strolling through the lobby. Yesterday we had Peter Gammons on, and he said he used to watch the glass elevators to see which GMs were going up together to try to figure out that stuff, but it doesn't happen so much anymore. But when you are all together, and when you're, you know, a hallway away from one another, you can really get caught up in it and say, all right, we got to get this done right now. And you have to kind of make sure that your the rational side of your brain triumphs over that other side.
Yeah, it is interesting that, you know, just the question, are you going to get something done here, or is there a deadline for you, or do you feel pressure? And there's no question that more things happen because of the things that we mentioned. So, but just those questions alone, I hear other teams mention, and you know, so it's, I think it's an opportunity. The momentum of the winter meetings. So, it's nothing more than that to us. We don't see it as a deadline.
But there are other teams that actually say, "All right, we're here. Let's get something done."
Yeah, I mean, I've heard teams talk about that, talk about it as an opportunity, and almost create a false deadline. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad strategy, so, because it's dependent upon the opportunity, but, you know, so I think that people see it as a time where things are, they are moving, there are opportunities, and when you can get together with, you know, every agent has several people helping him. Every GM has 15 to 30 people helping him or her. So, you know, it's the opportunities that present themselves because of everyone being in one building are real. And, you know, I, at the same time, we've tried to create that same momentum from day one of the off season. And so we feel good about the acquisitions that we made, and feel good about what's available to us, and we're glad we're only halfway through the off season.
Given the fact that both Jose and Edwin have not signed yet, you know, given the fact that I would think you're probably still looking for offense, any regrets at how you guys have handled those two situations? All right,
no.
Let me rephrase that. Not regrets. Would you have done it any differently in those two situations?
I could probably answer that question halfway through next year a little bit better, because so much is going to be dependent upon how guys span out, how things pan out into the year. And, you know, there's no question that every interaction that we have, that we think about, okay, how could we have handled that better from a strategy standpoint? Every negotiation, every deal, how could we have improved that? And we've yet to have a deal where we don't find something that we could have improved upon, or some interaction. So that's just how we operate, is how can we make it better? At the same time, we've we set a strategy at the beginning of the offseason. We spent a lot of time with a lot of people and a lot of input, came up with our strategy, and we're executing it. So that's what I would say.
A lot of the feedback I'm getting specifically, you know, to this issue about Edwin is giving it the rumor, I don't think you've ever confirmed, that he had they had 24 hours to take it or leave it, the offer, which we believe to be 4 years at $80 million, which would be better than anything he's been offered since. And a lot of feedback that I'm getting from the fans would be, well, is 24 hours really enough? You know, does that give the agent time, or is that like saying, well, we know you're probably not going to take it? If you had to do it again, or, you know, do you say, well, maybe 72 hours or something like that? Or does it just, is it just a matter of you guys saying, we need to know what's going on? We have our plan B that we got to get to.
So, you know, here's what I would tell you. So talking about any negotiation publicly is very touchy, mostly out of respect, especially in hindsight, for the player. Secondarily, out of respect for the agency. So certainly don't want to get into a, well, that's not exactly accurate, but that's not exactly accurate. You know, there was plenty of time for, in our opinion, for them to decide, and there was ample time, much more than 24 hours, much more than 72 hours, where we were talking about the general parameters. So a lot of interactions with Edwin, a lot of interactions with Paul, making sure that we didn't feel that we were putting too much pressure and giving him ample time to think about the opportunity that we had.
You've been linked with some free agents, Dexter Fowler being one of them. Do you have any idea when Dexter Fowler is going to make his mind up? Are we close to seeing a resolution? Whether or not it's with you guys, are we close to seeing a resolution of that situation, or is it pretty hard to get a read on that right now?
You know, I mean, here's what I can tell you is that it seemed everything, not just Dexter, but everything, because of what we're talking about at the beginning of the show, seems to have picked up a bit. So I would say four guys in that position, you know, whether it's Dexter Fowler or Ben Revere or Brandon Moss and Michael Saunders, Jose Bautista, you know, all of those guys, Edwin Encarnacion, all of those guys seem to have more tangible things occurring here because of what we were talking about.
That's the first time we've heard Brandon Moss from you, although he's been you know, active in the rumors. I mean, you know, I think of him as left-handed power, sort of what you already have, in that he's not a great outfielder, but you had him in Cleveland for a little bit. Is he a viable outfielder?
Like I said, there's not a player that fits our needs that we haven't had interactions with on some level, but they go well back to the beginning of the offseason. So we've touched base with every free agent that we feel fits our need, and we've gotten closer on two, and so deals occurred, and feel good about our opportunity to continue to improve our outfield, to improve our bullpen, and the backup catching situation.
We've seen relief pitchers get, well, we saw Joaquin Benoit get $7.5 million. We've seen relief pitchers get multi-year contracts. We've heard that Aroldis Chapman might be asking for 6 years. Can you get a big bullpen arm in this market right now? Are you positioned to do that either through free agency or perhaps by trade?
Sure. Yeah, we absolutely could. We're also in a position where we have Osuna, Grilly, mm-hmm. the potential of Biagini, depending on what's going to occur with him, three very strong pieces at the back of our bullpen. So we are not as aggressive as a couple of other teams are in the how you're defining the upper echelon of that market. But at the same time, we've got a lot of time left in this offseason, and that's also a market that seems to continue, as you saw last year when the trade for Grilly and Benoit happened, that there's plenty of time that those opportunities will present themselves, and we're certainly not averse to it.
Does the way this market seems to be playing out, though, with, like you said, like Jeff said, Benoit getting the money, Mark Zepchinski getting the big deal that he got, does the way the market is moving make you guys a little more, make the lean a little more towards keeping Biagini in the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that had we acquired Brett Cecil and had we acquired X and Y, then yes. And so I would say that's accurate how you depicted it.
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday when the Boston Red Sox acquired Chris Sale, David Dombrowski went out of his way to cite Ben Cherington and the work that he did, his predecessor did in getting those minor league prospects put together. If you look at the path that the Red Sox took when Ben was there winning the World Series one, you're signing Shane Victorino, Mike Napoli, all these guys. He's in this organization now. What type of input does he have in terms of personnel acquisition and sort of bigger picture things?
Yeah, I mean, Ben's been great. He's a great friend. He's obviously a great baseball executive that has a range of experiences that any team would benefit from. We're glad to have him, whether it's strategy, negotiation, philosophy, on all of those fronts. It's interesting because I'd say the bulk of his day, he's focused on people and systems and processes that we have in player development. And then when there's opportunities to talk to him about his experiences or other organizations or his vantage, he's next door, or he is a phone call away, or he's sitting in our room. So, you know, it's an incredible opportunity. We are really fortunate to have him. But, you know, Mark Shapiro has an incredible range of experiences, and, you know, Tony LaCava has an incredible range of experiences. So with the addition of Mike Moreau, the addition, having Andrew Tenish and Tony LaCava, who know this organization so intimately, we feel that it's really an incredible opportunity to learn from several organizations. Gil Kim coming from Texas, and, you know, there's transitions are tough and change is tough. But there's incredible opportunities when they occur, and one of our strategies in building our front office team was to learn from multiple organizations, and that created a lot of change for the Toronto Blue Jays. But now with Boston and Texas coming in, you know, with key leaders coming from those organizations, and obviously Cleveland and Toronto in some ways wedding, it's been an incredible learning year for a lot of us.
The landscape is different. The front office landscape is different now than it's ever been before in baseball. It used to be that the GM was the guy, and that was it, and the buck stopped with him, and he makes all the decisions, and you guys talk so much about collaboration, and everyone's got a voice, which seems like a really good way to do things. So the question 5 years ago to you would have been, what's it like to have all these ex-GMs around you? Do you have to look over your shoulder? Now the question is, how much do you enjoy having all these guys around you who used to run big league ball clubs too?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's I think it's never going to be about one person with us. It's never going to be about buck stopping with me. It's about how do we win and how do we get it right. I don't think there's a person right now that cares where the idea came from, who had the best strategy, whose thought process was more clear and was able to articulate that strategy better. There's hopefully, and I can speak for myself, but I think if you asked around our front office, I don't think anyone cares about how we do it. I think everyone's caring about that we do it.
What would it take for you to trade Marcus Stroman, to trade a pitcher to address a position?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, there's no player. It's interesting. I think some executives still view it that way, that there are certain players that are untouchable. We're in a business where we don't want to create absolutes or black and whites. We want to listen and engage and think creatively about how we put the best team on the field. But Marcus Stroman is an incredible athlete. He's someone that we are very fortunate to have, and he's been obviously very successful thus far. So I'm sure a lot of teams would like to have him, and we're glad he's a Toronto Blue Jay.
Do you get asked about your young pitchers a lot, Stroman, Sanchez, Osuna?
You know, not as much as you would think, because I think everyone understands right. that we're not motivated to move them. They're, you know, I think we get asked about them enough for teams to know, okay, it's going to take a lot for them to move those guys.
I wanted to ask you, I know you don't talk specifically about people, and you've touched base with everybody, so I'm sure you touched base at some point with Eric Thames, but I want to ask you your feelings about guys who come back from the Far East, like a Thames, like a Willene Rosario, who to me looks like would be a lovely fit if he wants a backup catcher job here. How do you sort of evaluate those incredible numbers? I mean, we saw that Young Ho Gung's kind of translated a little bit, but not to the extent that they do. How do you evaluate that stuff and translate it?
No, it's a great question. So, you know, the objective and subjective, right? So there's objective ways to do that where an analyst can look historically and reverse engineer. Okay, what does that mean? What has that meant historically? And then with scouts and historically thinking about trying to punch holes in whatever it projects. You know, but it takes the biggest thing for us and players like that is that takes a lot of time to understand the players' motivations, understand what happened, what occurred, what were the changes, are they tangible, and why is that information so different than what we've seen in the past. So, I happen to know that actual on Thames was I'm relatively confident in saying that it was close to a year of ongoing interactions, trying to understand that information before committing that amount of money. So it's about where you're applying resources.
Just before we let you go, I want to ask you about what I call post-hype guys who used to be really, really good or used to be highly thought of, who, you know, and we saw Eric Johnson get non-tendered, Tyson Ross get non-tendered, guys like that. And you've done the reclamation thing with Jason Grilley, with Joaquin Benoit last year. It seems like that's a place where you don't have to allocate a lot of assets to bring in people who are flyers, who may not work out. But what's your thought on those kind of gambles?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about... So there's several things. One is the concepts, the ideas... like I was mentioning earlier, they come from many different people, from many different places. There's a lot of information and ideas being exchanged. So then there's the understanding of why. So trying to find the tangible reason of why we think something will translate as opposed to maybe. And when we start to understand, okay, why is this player going to be in a better position? And what's trending in a way that gives us confidence to make an acquisition? Because it's not always about the opportunity or the acquisition. It's about the opportunity cost. So, you know, what are we not doing? Who's not getting this opportunity? So with Grilley, with Liriano, with Benoit, we had really strong reasons that we felt as though it would translate. And so that's what we're looking for, is to understand why it will, as opposed to let's just try.
Ross, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. And you've got another, day and a half here?
We do.
Enjoy the time.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Are you guys going to go back to Buffalo Soldier right now when I walk away? Because I was putting me in a great spot.
That's up to Brandeo now.
Yeah, we tend to skew towards reggae in this show.
I like it.
Yeah. Thanks, Ross. Take care.
All right, guys.